Welcome to Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK Radio, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world at www.kpfk.org. My name is Tammy Banglu, and I'm here with my co-host, Damon Azali. From the 2000 elections in Florida to the 2004 elections in Ohio, thousands of voters, particularly black voters, have been denied their right to vote. A recently released film, American Blackout, is an important documentary that chronicles these reoccurring patterns of voter disenfranchisement and uncovers the tactics used by the Republican Party in Georgia to unseat Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. So we're joined today by the director of the film, Ian Inaba, as well as Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. Then we're going to close off the show with Mon Ami Malik and Soshi Dosa of Drum, Desai Rising Up and Moving, to discuss their recently released report, Education Not Deportation, Impacts of the NYC Schools Safety Policies on South Asian Immigrants. We'll be right back. So we'd like to welcome Ian Inaba to the show. Ian's the founder of Guerrilla News Network, an independent news organization, and creator of Eminem's Mosh video. He just released his first feature-length film, American Blackout, which took home the special jury prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival. Welcome, Ian.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So before we dive into the content of the film, let's start with what led you to create this film. Was the intention to follow the story of Georgia Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney? Was this the vision that you set out to capture, or were there a turn of events that led to this end product?
Yeah, there definitely were a turn of events. What we do at the Guerrilla News Network, which is also GNN.TV on the web, is that we focus on covering stories that we feel the mainstream media does not properly cover. And so in 2003, after 9/11, there were so many of these stories in the lead up to the Iraq War that my partners and I decided that we were going to write a book called True Lies, which documented what we felt were about seven or eight of these top stories. And the one that I was particularly interested in was what was happening to this congresswoman down in Georgia. Not only was Cynthia McKinney somebody where, a case where the mainstream media was not accurately reporting what she had said and done, but it was actually that they were also participating in silencing a voice of dissent in our country at a time when it was very important to have those voices, which was, post 9/11 and the lead up to the Iraq War. So as I started to follow her and look into the issues that she had brought up or brought forth to the American people, she really led me into the issue of voter disenfranchisement. I looked into kind of her work around the Florida election, in particular in 2000, and uncovered some footage which I just felt needed to be seen by the world. And this is footage of her calling in the executives from DBT Choice Point, which was the company that was hired by the state of Florida prior to the 2000 election to do what they call a scrubbing of the voter rolls in Florida. And this effectively removed about 90,000 names from the voter rolls. In an election, which was eventually won by 537 votes by George Bush. So she really led me into that issue, and as I continued to follow her and see what was happening to her in her 2002 election, and then as she came back to win in 2004, while at the same time we saw a repeat of Florida in Ohio in 2004, I really started to craft what I wanted to tell of the story, which was the political tactics that are utilized right now to control our political process. And not only are they done to disenfranchise voters, but also to keep a hold of the political discussion in our country and limit them to certain voices and certain points of view. So the film does cover from Florida 2000 to Ohio 2004, and it uses Cynthia McKinney's story as even a story of hope. And because she was able to, in 2004, come back from what many people thought would not be a recoverable place. And as she came back in 2004, she continued to raise questions, bring this issue forward, bring the issue of unanswered questions around 9/11 forward. And once again, she became a target for Republicans who once again have unseated her here in 2006.
Mm. Well, I saw this film last week at the Magic Johnson Theater over at Baldwin Hills. It's a powerful film that chronicles the suppression of the black vote. Let's take a look at some of the main tactics. I mean, you talked about Florida and then scrubbing the voter rolls. what was really, I mean, appalling when I saw the film is that, talk a little bit about this DBT choice point, because they didn't actually have to double check the names at all. It was like something about 80% accuracy, and those roles went.
That's right. They were, you know, DBT choice point, you know, to their credit, was just doing their job. They were given very specific instructions, which were actually loose guidelines or very loose parameters as to how they would scrub the voter rolls. And so they were told by the state of Florida at the time to only use an 80% match on the last name. So this resulted in numerous names that were not the, even the exact names of people who were, had been convicted of felony convictions, were being taken off the voter rolls in Florida. And so how they were doing this is that they were taking felony conviction lists from nine other states, in the chance that those people now lived in Florida, they were then taking their names off the list. And so when you're taking people who are felony convictions from other states using a very loose 80% rule of match against the Florida voter roll, you're going to get a lot of people who shouldn't be taken off the list, And they told the state of Florida this. The state of Florida has told them to use the, those rules anyway, and that's what resulted in the massive numbers of names that were taken off the list before the 2000 election.
Yeah, I mean, we had somebody named like John Smith, and you had S-M-I-T-H, but the person who was actually disenfranchised was John Smith with an E, and that was actually, there were numerous of those tactics, and that was actually allowed to pass. And so John Smith with an E got disenfranchised.
That's right. Right. And what we, you know, and now as we see, you know, this continues to happen. And so as we, you know, we follow the film from Florida to Ohio, Ohio is a lot different than Florida, whereas in Florida there was kind of this one big smoking gun, which was that they scrubbed the Florida, the voter list, and took all these names off. In Ohio, it was kind of like a death by a thousand cuts. There were so many different ways in which they, either took people off the list or, gave false information about, or just out-of-date information about where people's polling locations were, or making it more difficult for people to vote by having fewer voting machines in areas where the voter registration had increased by a significant percentage. So the tactics continue to change every election, and now in 2006 we're seeing things like voter ID bills or more stringent regulations around voter registration. They continue to kind of keep the tactics going so that you can't always just know what to look for. And so that's why we really wanted to put it together as a series in this film so that people can recognize these things and understand the patterns here and understand that when there's new laws being enacted or things being done that are going to make it more difficult for people to participate in the political process, that that's probably being done as a political tactic to disenfranchise voters.
So you're listening to Voices from the Frontlines, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. This is Damon Azali and my co-host Tim Bang Lu. We're speaking to Ian Anaba, who is the director of American Blackout. It was interesting because in 2004, Tim and I work for an organization called the Labor Community Strategy Center, and we sent five folks down to Florida to actually help out in terms of the elections. And specifically on election day, our task was to go to different precincts and go and count the actual number of voting machines in each of the precincts. And we saw, you know, the theory was that in the heavily black Haitian immigrant communities, there are fewer machines, and in the suburbs where more white folks are, or even the more upper class Cubans, they had more voting machines, and that's was one of the tactics. And I know in the film it also talked about that. So the question that I have for you is, in terms of all the different, you know, death by a thousand cuts, what do you think were the most outrageous tactics that they used to basically cut voters out?
In 2004, I think the misallocation of the voting machines, particularly around the Columbus area, where there's the, you know, the high density of the black population lives, really was probably the most damaging thing to the vote. And I say damaging because it's not, it's a ripple effect and it's an echo effect. And it's not just that certain people maybe had to wait in line longer or that certain people may just got turned away and just decided not to wait. But it's almost like it's a message being put out to these people where they go to, you know, because a lot of young people voted for the first time in 2004. The youth voter registration rates, you know, jumped up by over 10%, which was much higher than any other age range. And so you had all these people coming out for their first time. And when you go to the poll and you see these three-hour long lines, it just sends a message that, you know, that you're not wanted here, that this is too difficult, that you know, your vote doesn't count, that it doesn't matter. And so that's what we're hearing now. I'm in Ohio actually right now, in Columbus, and you know, we're taking this film into communities so that they can get this message out that, you know, that people's votes are powerful, and that's the only reason that they do want to disenfranchise you. And so it's really important to kind of understand that it's not, you know, that this is a long-term battle, that they want people to disengage from the process entirely and not just necessarily to take their vote away from them once, but to establish a pattern where people will not want to participate.
Mm. Well, there's another tactic that the film documents really well. So in terms of trying to figure out what you talked about in terms of strategy and tactics, the Republican tactic of a crossover to oust McKinney in 2002. Let's talk about that a little, because in terms of their choice of understanding the terrain, Georgia operating as an open primary, and then how they organize precinct by precinct to get the Republicans to cross over.
Right. You know, this point has actually, it's always a point of discussion. After the film screenings, we usually have a very lively community discussion. And some people say, well, why did you put in a crossover tactic that was a legal maneuver? And the people that are more politically sophisticated say that what was used against McKinney, both in 2002 and again now in 2006, which was a crossover vote, which for people that don't understand what that is, that's in certain states, there are open primaries, meaning it doesn't matter which party you're registered to, you can pull either a Democrat or Republican ballot on voting day, on primary day, and participate in either party's primary. Well, what happens in certain races is that the minority party, typically the minority party in a district, will organize so that they will cross over into the majority party's primary and participate in that so that they can make sure that a certain candidate usually loses by voting for the opponent and adding on to the minority votes, which then make a majority within that primary. And so that was the tactic that's used against Cynthia McKinney. And again, it may be legal what they're doing, but the real question and the reason I wanted to put it in here and raise this question to the American people is, even though it's legal, is it moral? And that's really what we have to ask ourselves, because a lot of these things that were done in Florida or in Ohio, those things were technically also done within the letter of the law. But when people look at them, you know, you say more blatantly, okay, this should not have happened, and people disagree with it. Well, but I feel it's the same way when it comes to what was used against Cynthia McKinney, because here, once again, you have people interfering with a fair election. And just in most states, the crossover voting tactic has been outlawed, that it's not even allowed. You know, in California, it's not allowed. So, but in Georgia, it still remains. And it's this lineage there of what used to be an all-white primary. And so, just because something is legal in our country, we have to ask ourselves, is it moral? Because there are laws being, as I mentioned before, being passed even today around voter registration, around voter ID bills. And these things would, again, once again, make it legally more difficult for people to vote. But morally, is that the right thing for us to do as a society? And so that's really why we want this film to really stimulate discussion around our election systems and let people understand and really take ownership for it themselves, because we can't rely on either political party or any politician to make sure that we're going to have fair elections. We're going to have to roll up our sleeves and make sure we do it ourselves.
So I encourage everybody to actually go to the website, www.americanblackout.com. You'll see trailers from the film. You'll see spoken word pieces. You'll see Ian and Cynthia's call for a movement to actually bring this word out, starting a couple years before the next election. So I encourage everybody to check that out. I mean, one of the questions that I have is, just say that there is a progressive candidate that ends up winning election, no matter the fact that they have not enough vote machines in particular districts, or people are scrubbed off the list, et cetera, et cetera. What are the real things that we can actually do to make sure an election is not overturned?
you're saying what can we do to protect, to try to ensure a fair election, or
I mean, not so much the fair election, because if I see, I can see the 2004 and 2008 elections and saw how they do different tactics were overturning. You can even see internationally in terms of Mexico and whatnot. People actually, there's a very close race or the progressive candidate is winning, and then it gets overturned by the, you know, either the legislative branch not taking a stand or the Supreme Court. And so my whole thing is, like, when I'm doing precinct walking, I want to get the expert's opinion on what are the actual things that can actually make the government accountable, particularly the legislative and the judicial branch, to make sure that if a progressive candidate wins, that they actually win and it's not a judicial coup, if you
say
that.
Well, fortunately, we haven't seen that much of that in this country yet. And that is because they've been so effective with their political maneuvering to try to affect the results prior to that point, right? I mean, in 2004, we saw major discrepancies between what were the exit polls and the actual results that were certified by, for example, the state of Ohio. And so we haven't really seen the threat of overturning it. And so I would say that people should be maybe less concerned or focused on that in terms of what they can do, and more concerned in terms of understanding exactly what goes on in your jurisdiction, in your precinct, in your county. Like, know what laws are being enacted around voting. You know, is it a voter ID bill being proposed in, you know, the 9 states that's being proposed in right now, or new stringent laws around voter registration, or with a type of voting machine that's being implemented in your area, or when are they conducting scrubs of the list or cleanings of the list. And you have to, you can request this information, you can talk to your county board of elections and find out this information and become concerned citizens, because most of these things, like I said, in this country now, the tactics are not even done necessarily on election day. They're done way before that. So election day, it's too late. We need to be monitoring what's going on in our areas the entire 365 days a year, even in off-presidential years. And that's really what it's going to take, because the stakes are so high here that they know this, and they're at work constantly to try to keep the voting base down. So I'm not sure if that exactly answered it, but I really feel like you know, the attention needs to really be focused right now for everybody to make sure that they understand what's going on and calling attention. Because, for example, it happened in Ohio where they have passed very stringent laws, but they were just effectively got a judge to stop some of those things before they were implemented here just in the past weeks. And so it does work when there's public outcry and when people are noticing this stuff happening real time. It doesn't work when we show up on election day and then, you know, cry afterwards that we didn't get a fair shake.
Mm. So in the end of the movie, you're asking folks to join the American Blackout Movement. Talk about what people can do, and then also tell us a little bit about the feedback since you've been screening the film in major urban cities.
Right. Well, yeah, we've screened in about 15 states now, and we've had tremendous reaction to the film. Just an outpouring of interest and concern about what has been going on in our election systems over since 2000. And so what we decided to do was to create a larger outreach program so that this movement can continue on and can hopefully incentivize and encourage a new wave of activism among the general public when it comes to our voting systems. And so what we're doing is we're doing something called the End the Blackout campaign, which we're encouraging individuals, groups, churches, whatever it might be, to hold screenings first just as an awareness platform around this issue in their community. So we're asking people, starting this last week of this month, leading all the way up to the election, to organize a screening, get as many people in your area to see it, and hold a discussion. Then we have a discussion guide that can help facilitate the discussion on where people can go to apply their efforts if they want to get involved in things they can do in their local communities. So that's the first piece, is just making sure that all Americans understand and are aware that this is a problem with our election systems. And then the second piece is really to enable there to be an ongoing living body of documentation of things that go on, because without that, we will never know what exactly has happened, and we will not be able to speak out against it and correct those problems. And so I was only able to make this film and particularly the Ohio section, which I think people really get outraged around, and it really just shows the evidence of how this was done in Ohio. And that was only possible because after Florida, people went to the polls on Election Day with video cameras in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And they were there, and they got that stuff on film. You know, they got the long lines. They got the different activities, the people being confused around provisional ballots and being told that they need to go to a different voting location. So all of that stuff, you know, allowed me to put into a cohesive statement, which was the entire film, and really further the public awareness of this. So we want that to continue ongoing, and so we're encouraging people on Election Day to go to their polls with cameras, to document what happened, and we're going to have a text messaging campaign that will alert people to instances of or irregularities that go on in their region so that they can, if they're available, go to document them and then upload them to our website. So that's just a program that we're just about to initiate, and we look forward to working with the different indie media and independent filmmakers all around the country to do this.
Well, the website is www.americanblackout.com. We're going to take a break, and Ian's going to be back, and hopefully we'll get Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney on. So welcome back to Voices from the Front Lines on KPFK Radio, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. And we're talking with Ian Inaba, who is the director of American Blackout, which took home the special jury prize at the Sundance Film Festival. Ian, welcome back.
We got you in there, Ian?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. So, you know, a little bit of a switch. You know, I saw in your bio that it states that you were an investment banker and a software company CEO. So, I mean, what made you change some? What made these life choice changes?
Well, you know, we all kind of take our turns in life, and I was somebody that went to school and studied business and engineering, and kind of went into the business world, and then went into kind of the internet world as well, and I just wasn't completely satisfied with the work that I was doing. I really wanted to kind of dedicate myself to doing more socially responsible work and actually create something. And so I had the opportunity to join with some old friends of mine back in 1999, and that's right at the time when GNN was founded. And we've been at it now for, you know, 6, almost 7 years. And have built a pretty good following on the web just in terms of kind of news junkie, kind of young people. And we're trying to provide them examples of how to make content that can compete in the mainstream kind of media realm, but also put forward progressive social messaging. So, it was kind of just a long journey here. And I'm not quite sure exactly where this journey is going to end up, but I feel I've found a pretty good place for now.
So tell folks, I mean, how, you know, we're always trying to figure out in terms of you've got media streams all tied up with mainstream media. What's it like to try to produce an independent film and get theaters to pick it up?
You know, I got to tell you, this film has been probably the biggest battle that I've taken on in my life, and I probably didn't even know what I was getting myself into, but I probably should have, knowing or documenting what I had seen were the forces that were coming against Cynthia McKinney, and that's because, when you try to put out information which is not out there for a reason, you are going to come up against obstacles. Whether it's censorship by corporations or difference of opinion with the official line that's put out by the prevailing administration, whatever the factors may be, there's a reason usually why these stories have not broken. And Greg Palast is a journalist who has repeatedly fought these battles over his career, particularly since the 2000 election. And, you know, so it's a challenge, I got to tell you. You know, it's a lot of work to not only make the film or make something that is palatable and entertaining enough that you can get people to see it, but then also to try and guarantee that people see it. So that's really what we're doing now is, you know, we've been on the road with this film since January. And like I said, we screened in about 15 states. And now we're getting to the level we want people just to screen this wherever they can, in barbershops, in parking lots, you know, and we have a lot of people coming to us that want to screen this. So the good news is that when you put something out there which is not out there, there usually is an appetite for it. And you see that even now with a lot of the 9/11 pieces that are coming out. And so while it may be a battle, there will be people there that are very passionate about helping you. And that's different than if you were making something strictly commercial. So it's, you know, you gotta know the battle that you're getting yourself into, but at the same time, know that there's a lot of good people that want to fight the good fight with you.
I mean, one of the things that I think is interesting about American Blackout, besides just the movie and the content of it, was the fact that you're trying to build a movement around it. And as Tam and I, being organizers, know that it needs to hit on a lot of different levels. And I see the film as particularly, you know, trying to build a movement around getting the exposure to the particular issue, getting the film out, et cetera. I want to kind of ask you a little bit, since you've seen a lot of the ins and outs of whatnot of the whole electoral process. In terms of a political campaign, what would be the targets in terms of actually trying to change the stuff around the not having enough voting machines or changing the rules around precincts and voting and whatnot? I imagine it would be the Secretary of State. Is that the place to go, or?
That is one of the, you know, there's different, and we're working with a number of different groups and people who all have a different take and a different target on it. You know, some people, what they want to do is just turn out the vote and try to overwhelm these tactics, right? Because these tactics really hurt the most when it's on the margin. And so if you can totally overwhelm it by just having massive turnout, then people feel like that will solve the problem. Other people, like you're saying, are focusing on the Secretary of State and trying to get more kind of fair-minded or who they think are going to be fair candidates in those roles, as they have very strategic and important roles at deciding how elections get carried out in each of the states, particularly the swing states. So those are two good things that where a lot of energy is being applied right now to try to correct things. But again, I take it back to a very more basic responsibility that I think that we all have as citizens in this country, and that is to own up to it ourselves and to not say that this is somebody else's problem, because, you know, there may not be people being disenfranchised where you live, in your precincts, in your neighborhood, but you have to understand that when somebody's voice out there is not being counted, that person may think like you. And if their voice is not being counted, then your voice, which may be similar to that, is being underrepresented somewhere else, and that's going to affect you eventually too. So you may not live in Ohio or Florida or one of these places where it seems that these elections always come down to, but you should be concerned and you should be aware and fight those battles with those people because they need your help. So I think that we all need to take this responsibility on ourselves and be aware of what's going on around us and in our country, and stand up for these issues when we don't think that it's morally right.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. We call it transformative organizing. It's basically trying to get people who are basically fight for the most oppressed people at any given time in any given situation, and it's the whole process of coming from your own consciousness in the world to really understand the levels of oppression that other people feel. But I want to get back to the quick question around Secretary of State while I still have you on the phone. What is the Secretary of State's role? What are they in charge of in terms of the particular election, in terms of what are all the different levels that they can mess around with during the election?
Well, the Secretary of State, you know, the Secretary of State's main job is to conduct elections. I mean, there are other responsibilities, particularly administrative responsibilities around registering businesses and other things that fall under the Secretary of State, but their primary function is to administer the elections in each of the states. And that is a very big job. And so that comes down to everything from overseeing the county election supervisors, as well as even, you know, down to the poll workers. So, you know, those decisions are made at that level as to what companies are contracted for the voting machines. It's the same as, you know, who and what types of laws are implemented around voter registration or voter ID bills. Like, all these things usually originate the implementation of those laws are usually overseen by the Secretary of State. So, for example, in Ohio, you had Ken Blackwell in 2004 made very particular decisions about the interpretation of certain laws around voter registration, how heavy the paper needed to be, when the information would be put out as to where people's voting locations are. So every decision along the way in administering an election can usually be affected by the Secretary of State's office. It may not be the direct responsibility, but it falls usually under their office. And so that's the whole thing, is that, and that's why when we look at it now, we say you have to really look at the whole election system like a living and breathing organism even. Because it's not just, and you have to understand that it is a fluid system, and that so there are multiple points of pressure and vulnerability which have to be monitored. Because it's not just one place all the time. You know, the new tactic now is that they're not only scrubbing people off the list, but at the same time they're trying to make it more difficult to get back on the list by making it more difficult for groups, particularly out-of-state groups, to register voters, particularly in swing states. So, again, you have to look and understand that there's all these different places where the Secretary of State has their hand, whether that's in the administration of the machines or the regulations around registering voters or the accuracy and integrity of the voting list itself or even counting the vote on election day and certifying that vote afterwards. All of those decisions all along that chain of events which constitute an election, the Secretary of State plays a very important role. And what the problem that we had in the past two presidential elections was that both in Florida with Katherine Harris and in Ohio with Ken Blackwell, while these two people were the Secretary of State administering the elections in what came down to be the decisive states in the presidential elections, they were both independently chairs or co-chairs of the Bush Election Committee at the same time. So here you have a direct conflict of interest. It's as if you had two sports teams playing and you allowed one of the coaches for the teams to be the referee of the game. I mean, most Americans would feel like that's just not fair and you're going to run into problems. Well, we ran into those problems both in Florida and in Ohio. But because that's not illegal, that continues to happen. And so that's why there's a number of organizations right now. There's something called the Secretary of State Project, which people can look at on the web. And that is trying to target the different Secretary of State candidates, particularly in the swing states.
Okay. So we all, just for the last question, it looks like we're not going to get Cynthia McKinney on today. She's probably going fighting the Republicans and some of the Democrats too. But the question I had for you, the last question was, I know in terms of writing books or doing movies or whatnot, there's always parts that you want to say but didn't quite make it in the movie because of lack of time or whatnot. So I wanted to ask you, what was the part that if you had another 15 minutes that you would have want to put in?
There were so many things I got to tell you. This started out being a film just about Cynthia McKinney, and then once Ohio happened, you know, I said, "Oh, geez, this is the story that I have to tell." And so there were a lot of elements. You know, there were a lot of different factors, I'd say, because the film first started being about media censorship and how the media plays into the political process. And the thing that I ended up having to take out, so some of that stuff is still in the film, but the things I really had to take out was how the different lobbying groups, particularly the defense contractors, as well as AIPAC,
And define what AIPAC is for our listeners.
AIPAC is the American Israeli Lobby. And so both of those, you know, Cynthia McKinney has kind of gone up against both of those lobbies. I mean, here's a woman where if people want to, if you think about it, I mean, because even in the progressive community, right now Cynthia McKinney has a very tarnished reputation. And I think that people have to ask themselves, why would there be so much negative press around a certain individual? You know, and when you see that, it should raise flags, and you should really try to do some work and understand what the issues are around here. Because, you know, I have to tell you, she's somebody that takes on each of these individual powers and has paid the price. And particularly around the Capitol Hill incident that occurred in March, people probably remember this, that she got in a scuffle with a police officer or an alleged scuffle with a police officer. And that really, once again, created an environment in the media where people kind of came after her and were able to kind of take her down, and her then losing her 2006 election. So there were certain scenes that I had to take out of the movie which showed kind of the influence of those different lobbying groups on particularly, you know, her race, and showing how influential they are in politics and in the media. Because I think that, you know, people forget that a lot of times that, you know, there's paid bloggers. I mean, there's think tanks that have their own internet publications that they put out on five different websites so that you think that it's a real news story. I mean, the level of biased information that is now put out on the internet is even more so, I think, than, you know, because people always talk about how the internet has freed up the media. Well, just understand that freeing up of the media has also created more and more misinformation and disinformation in order to occupy that space, or to compete with what are more progressive or alternative news viewpoints. So particularly like around the Capitol Hill incident, and I encourage people to go to our website again, it's AmericanBlackout.org, and you can see I went to Capitol Hill after that incident, and I interviewed four black police officers who allowed me to interview them on condition of anonymity. And they told me a version of the events that went down with Cynthia McKinney that differs greatly from what the mainstream press had printed. Their indication is that here's a woman who once again had challenged who was the attorney general of the police department, and she had called for this guy's resignation back in 2001, and they felt that this incident that occurred with her on Capitol Hill was basically payback for that, and that it was an instigated incident where they were targeting her specifically. And so these guys gave me this interview on camera, and it was too late to put it in the film, but I did offer it up to journalists and published it on our site, GNN.TV, and no mainstream press has wanted to break this story. So,
it was the Black Police Officers Association that actually did a suit, right?
Right. The Black Police Officers Association have a standing class action suit against the police department.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a big rift between the white and black police officers on Capitol Hill. And so that's why these black officers wanted to come forward and tell their side of the story, because they felt that just like McKinney was targeted, that they are also targeted on the police force. And so they felt like that story needed to be told. And so,
okay, well, Ian, we got to get to the next person, but we want to thank you very much for the wealth of information you gave to us today. Again, you can get more information about American Blackout from www.americanblackout.com. Also, in the L.A. area, I believe it's still playing at the Magic Johnson Theaters at King and Crenshaw. Their number is 323-290-5900. Ian Inaba, director of American Blackout, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
And this is Damon Azali and Tan Bang Lee. We'll be right back after the break with our next guest.